there is only one real peace now, and that is peace for all time. Now, there are three imperatives of peace, three requirements that the prudent man must face with unblinking realism. The first imperative is the elementary necessity of maintaining our own national strength, moral, economic, and military. It is still my conviction, as I wrote in 1947, the compelling necessities of the moment leave us no alternative to the maintenance of real and respectable strength, not only in our moral rectitude and our economic power, but in terms of adequate military preparedness. Our economic power, as everyone knows, is displaying a capacity for growth which is both rapid and sound, even while supporting record military budgets. We must keep it growing. But moral strength is also essential. Today, we are competing for men's hearts and minds and trust all over the world. In such a competition, what we are at home and what we do at home is even more important than what we say abroad. Here again, my friends, we find constructive work for each of us. What each of us does, how each of us acts, has an influence on this question. Now, the second imperative of peace is collective security. We live in a shrunken world, a world in which oceans are crossed in hours, a world in which a single-minded despotism menaces the scattered freedoms of scores of struggling independent nations. To ensure the combined strength of friendly nations is for all of us an elementary matter of self-preservation, as elementary as having a stout militia in the days of the flintlock. Again, the strength I speak of is not military strength alone. The heart of the collective security principle is the idea of helping other nations to realize their own potentialities, political, economic, and military. The strength of the free world lies not in cementing the free world into a second monolithic mass to compete with that of the communists. It lies rather in the unity that comes of the voluntary association of nations, which, however diverse, are developing their own capacities and asserting their own national destinies in a world of freedom and of mutual respect. There can be no enduring peace for any nation while other nations suffer privation, oppression, and a sense of injustice and despair. In our modern world, it is madness to suppose that there could be an island of tranquility and prosperity in a sea of wretchedness and frustration. For America's sake, as well as the world's, we must measure up to the challenge of the second imperative, the urgent need for mutual economic and military cooperation among the free nations, sufficient to deter or repel aggression wherever it may threaten. But even this is no longer enough. We are in the era of the thermonuclear bomb that can obliterate cities and can be delivered across continents. With such weapons, war has become not just tragic, but preposterous. With such weapons, there can be no victory for anyone. Plainly, the objective now must be to see that such a war does not occur at all. And so the third imperative of peace is this: without for a moment relaxing our internal and collective defenses, we must actively try to bridge the great chasm that separates from the peoples under communist rule. In those regions are millions of individual human beings who have been our friends and who themselves have sincerely wanted peace and freedom throughout so much of our mutual history. Now, for years, the Iron Curtain was impenetrable. Our people were unable to talk to these individuals behind the curtain, or travel among them, or share their arts or sports, or invite them to see what life is like in a free democracy. We are beginning to be able, cautiously and with our eyes open, to encourage some interchange of ideas, of books, magazines, students, tourists, artists, radio programs, technical experts, religious leaders, and governmental officials. The hope is, little by little, mistrust based on falsehoods will give way to international understanding based on truth.